Coming up on Tech News Today, why Facebook got Instagram and how it got faster. Twitter's cutting off APIs. Why? And why the U.S. hates 4G? So many whys. So many answers. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, August 23rd, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachary.
And I'm Jason Owl.
And this is the show where we bring you the most important stories in the tech world and put them in context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Sony continued the process of taking over the former joint venture with Ericsson by announcing the headquarters will move from Lund, Sweden to Tokyo. Sony Mobile also announced it will lay off 1,000 employees, about 15% of its staff, by March 2014. But hey, Sweden's nice, right? I'm sure they could find jobs there, maybe with what's left of Ericsson.
Microsoft is changing its corporate logo for the first time in a quarter century. Yes, the logo we've come to know and some of us love since 1987 is getting an update with an official unveiling, at Microsoft's 23rd store opening today in Boston. It'll also appear at the Seattle and Bellevue stores, as well as on Microsoft.com. The new logo is designed to signal the heritage, but also signal the future and a newness and freshness, said Jeff Hansen, Microsoft's general manager of brand strategy, which is apparently a position.
It looks very the design formerly known as Metro.
You can see it's fresh because the snake lines are gone. LG's mass-producing lots and lots of displays with in-cell technology. That's the one that embeds touch sensors in the display instead of requiring a separate layer. So why is this news? Oh, because LG supplies Apple with displays, and people think that those new LG displays are coming to the unannounced next iPhone due to the timing.
By the time you hear this, Instagram may already be Facebook's. That's right. More than 4 months after the announcement of the proposed acquisition, the FTC in the United States, a week after the OFT in the UK, have both now approved the deal. Instagram gets the shaft a bit, though, as the IPO of Facebook stock and the subsequent decline in its value means the value of the purchase price dropped from the original $1 billion at the time of the announcement to around $750 million now.
HP has reported quarterly losses of $8.9 billion, the worst in its 73-year history. CEO Meg Whitman warned that the news might continue through a multi-year turnaround. HP reported revenue of $29.7 billion, down 5% from the $31.2 billion from the same period in 2011, and saw sales decline in all of its core businesses units, except software, which saw revenue growth of 18%, bolstered by its acquisition of Autonomy, completed last October.
Zynga's general manager of Cityville, and that's a real position, Alan Patmore is leaving Zynga for KIXEYE as VP of product. KIXEYE is also a gaming company that looks like a different animal compared to Zynga. Its games include War Commander, Battle Pirates, and Backyard Monsters. Zynga also recently lost its COO, John Shepard, who departed after 15 months on the job.
Shouldn't it be called Mayor? Mayor of Cityville, right?
Sure.
No? I don't know. You know who doesn't want LTE? Ooh. USA.
What?
Or at least almost half of the folks who live there. Investment firm Piper Jaffray surveyed 3,000 folks and found 47% don't feel they need 4G LTE. 26% feel all 4G network technologies are the same. And 55% of those surveyed said they are considering buying the next iPhone. 44% said they'd choose Verizon. 29% said AT&T.
The Electronic Privacy Information Center, or EPIC, has released government documents showing that license plate readers, which include precise GPS location, date, and timestamps, in addition to the plate in question, are shared with an auto insurance umbrella organization, which is ruffling some feathers, as you can imagine. The documents include a memorandum of understanding from 2005 between the National Insurance Crime Bureau and the United States Customs and Border Protection Agency. The NICB says insurance companies are members of the organization but don't automatically gain access to this data. Only authorized special investigation units personnel from NICB member companies have access to such data for theft prevention activities and presentation.
I can't wait for the CBS crime show about this. September 5th will be the mother of all announcement days, including new phones from Nokia running the next version of Windows. According to The Verge's Tom Warren, sources say Nokia will reveal two phones. One, codenamed Phi, will be a hero phone, as they say, successor to the Lumia 800 and 900. And the other phone, codenamed Arrow, will be its plucky sidekick, learning the business, questioning the hero's ideals and motivations while providing invaluable... It's a mid-range phone.
Or it'll be the convenient hostage. Sure, location services are great when you're outdoors, but what about when you're lost indoors? You know, for shut-ins like me. Nokia, Samsung, Sony, and a number of other companies are teaming up to standardize technology used for indoor location services. Their super team is called the InLocation Alliance, and they're going to start with Wi-Fi standards and Bluetooth 4.0. The alliance is 22 companies strong, but Apple and Google aren't a part of the group.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. You want that latest iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. You're going to need a little extra cash to pay for the upgrade, and there is no simpler or easier way to get some cash than by using Gazelle to sell your iPhone, your iPad, your MacBook, your Android smartphone. It is very simple. I've done it a bunch of times this summer to get a little extra cash. You go to G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You choose your device. They've made it easier than ever to choose the device off that front page. You don't even have to do typing in most cases. You just see the one that looks like your device. You're like, oh, yeah, that's it. I've got that Apple iPhone 4S 64 gig. And you're like, well, wait a minute now. I don't want to get rid of my Apple iPhone 4S until I hear for sure there's going to be an announcement. Well, you can lock in the quote for 30 days. So there's no reason not to go lock in that offer right now. You might get a few hundred dollars more than if you wait until after an announcement. So don't delay. Go there. Go to gazelle.com. You can get paid fast. They'll give you a shipping label so you can mail it in free, and you'll be able to get your money by PayPal, by check, or even by Amazon gift card. They give you a 5% bonus if you choose that one. So don't wait. Gadgets don't get more valuable over time, especially after new gadgets are announced. So go to Gazelle right now. Do it now. The sooner you do, more money you're probably going to get. Sell your used iPhones, iPads, Macs, and other smartphones today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to dig a little deeper into the stories of the day, Mr. Patrick Beja is back with us from patrickbeja.com.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's good to have you back, man. How's things going in France?
French, mostly.
Yeah, oui. Bien sûr.
We just had an incredible heat wave, which was a nice change. So, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, global warming's great for France. Love that.
Excellent.
Well, let's start off with that Facebook Instagram acquisition. 4 months after it was announced, Instagram now will become part of Facebook. They're probably dotting the I's, crossing the T's right now. I expect an official announcement that it is closed very soon. What's interesting, TechCrunch had an article digging into why the Office of Fair Trading in the UK said they approved the deal. We don't have a similar statement from the US FTC yet, but OFT provided three rationales for approving Facebook's acquisition of Instagram, which I found interesting. One is Facebook's app sucks for photos, essentially. They said Camera Plus, Hipstamatic, Camera Awesome, they all have bigger market share than Facebook's camera app.
Well, they can wait it out on Hipstamatic.
So it's not like they're going to dominate the market suddenly by acquiring Instagram. Point number two, Instagram does not generate any revenue. And they quoted one third party telling them that it does not consider Instagram provides significant marketing opportunities. So in other words, OFT was convinced, well, Instagram isn't going to make any money anyway. So yeah, Facebook's app's no good.
Dumb
Instagram's
buy.
Not going to make
Go
any
ahead.
Money. And then they said, and besides that, Google's ad business is just going to kick you all over the place anyway. Google Plus is competition and Google runs the app store for Android that you have to sell Instagram in. So it sort of reads like the OFT saying, we don't see this as a great acquisition, but sure, go ahead.
Well, one of the biggest points is Facebook's native photos application is not a very good Instagram competitor, right? So it's not as if they've already got a really strong product, then they're acquiring another one, and now all of a sudden the FTC has a problem with it. FTC is like, I don't know, there's not really a problem. But that's exactly why they bought Instagram, right?
Right. Yeah.
And Instagram is a successful product, so all Facebook has to do is figure out how to monetize it.
Facebook,
and that would be ad-based.
Didn't have a camera app at the time of this acquisition.
Correct.
And launched it afterwards.
In fact, I think it's Facebook Camera Dot came soon afterwards, which led a lot of people to say, well, that's weird. They've obviously been working on it for a while. Now, but Instagram acquisition happened at the same time.
Do you think these are good rationales, stupid rationales, but the right reason? These are wrong rationales and this acquisition shouldn't be allowed? Ayaz, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's strange to look at app by app because, I mean, the way people upload to Facebook is not necessarily through that camera app, as you guys were saying. It's relatively new and it's not that popular because Instagram was getting purchased. At least the news was around that time. So it's how often are people uploading to Facebook directly, I guess, for this kind of, monopoly when it comes to photography. But then again, Instagram is a different animal. That's the other thing. It's not necessarily what Facebook does. The filters and sharing, that's kind of there. But Facebook is, it seems more album-based, I think, compared to something like Instagram.
Yeah, a little more raw. Mm-hmm.
And Facebook has said that they are going to let Instagram continue to be Instagram, that they just want that team to help them improve the Facebook photo section. I can't believe they'll continue to have Facebook Camera and Instagram both as apps out in the marketplace.
They might. Yeah. But I mean, it's definitely a strange, I mean, you were asking if it's good or bad rationale. It's definitely a strange rationale because we already know that Facebook is the biggest website for uploading photos in the world, right? It's been above Flickr for a while now, I believe. And they're saying, yes, and Facebook doesn't really have a big market share on mobile, but then they're saying it's okay to give them or to let them buy the app that has by far the biggest dominating market share on mobile. So they already have a huge market share on photos on the web, and they're saying, okay, you can have also that huge market share on mobile. So if the intent is to judge, I guess the only reason why you wouldn't want it to happen would be fair trade and, monopoly questions, then I don't really understand why they said it was okay. So I don't think that they should be barred from buying Instagram, but I don't know how they reached to the conclusion that it was okay for them to buy it, given their reasoning. I'm not sure how it worked there.
I also don't think that Instagram and I do think that Instagram and the Facebook Camera app can coexist because they do different things, at least right now. If I've got a variety of photos that I took, in a week span, we all go camping, right? And I take 40 photos.
As we do.
As we always do.
I know I do.
I can go ahead and bundle those into an album, upload it to Facebook through that app easily. That's something I can't do with Instagram. And, there's the folks in the chat room, and I know a lot of people out there watching and listening who are like, I don't like Instagram. The filter thing is stupid. It ruins photos. Well, Facebook Camera, even though they do have filters, I think there's less emphasis on that. So it is Facebook saying it can be a utility or it can kind of be an art project, and we're going to offer you both.
I never use the filters. I use Instagram all the time to share photos through Twitter, but I never use the filter. I just take photos.
I don't know why you bother with Instagram then, really.
That's just an easy way to have. I like the Instagram social network and the commenting.
In. Yeah.
And then it also, if I want to send it to Twitter, which I don't always, sometimes I just put it on Instagram.
You're supposed to always hashtag no filter then, if you're not actually using a filter, to let people know that
they
there
can't
isn't
tell
a filter.
That it's. Oh, really?
Wow. In fact, they probably think you tried really hard to make it awesome and they're like, pretty mediocre.
Wow, that filter didn't work, Tom.
That's a bad one.
I mentioned I use Instagram because I want to post to Twitter easily. Recently, we had the news that Instagram was barred from using Twitter to find friends to add to your Instagram feed, that you can still post from Instagram to Twitter for now. That probably is going to push Instagram into further promoting Facebook as the way to find friends and share photos.
And why wouldn't they,
right?
Now that they're all one big company?
And now we find out today that Tumblr is getting pushed around by Twitter.
Yeah, so last month, the find friends option was stripped from Instagram. As Tom said, Instagram, you can still post photos to Twitter. It's not as if the relationship has completely gone sour, but Twitter changes API basically to shut down Instagram. Now, a lot of people said, this has to do with the fact that Facebook bought Instagram. So Instagram's just going to be a Facebook property. Twitter doesn't really want to play nice with something that they consider a really direct competitor. But Instagram wasn't the first company that Twitter did this to. LinkedIn, which was a couple of months ago, started this ball rolling where people said, if Twitter can just revoke certain API access to send tweets to LinkedIn, because presumably Twitter gets nothing out of it, so why do they just want to be the utility for that? Who's next? Turns out it's Tumblr.
Tumblr's next.
Yeah, exactly. About 24 hours ago, Matt Buchanan over at BuzzFeed predicted that Tumblr was next. Now, assuming that he had no insider info, his timing was impeccable because around 5 p.m. Eastern time, he noticed that indeed the Find Friends option for Twitter was missing from Tumblr. Now, again, Tumblr and Twitter still work together. You can choose to cross-post things. It's just, if you sign up for an account on Tumblr, one of the easiest ways to populate your dashboard right away is to say, oh, who are all my friends on Twitter? I'll go ahead and add them because they're using both services. There's some speculation that this is because Tumblr is not just a competitor to Twitter for our time and energy, but a media company. You know, Twitter didn't used to be a media company, and now that's clearly the direction that they're going in. Tumblr, you would say, is also a media company, and a big one at that. I mean, Tumblr has millions of users. It's been around, gosh, almost about the same time, at least in the public space, as Twitter has. So it seems like a logical place to shut down if Twitter, again, doesn't want to be utility for a company that they consider to be a direct competitor. Tumblr has confirmed that this happened, and they're mad. There was a quote from them. Quote, to our dismay, Twitter has restricted our users' ability to find Twitter friends on Tumblr. Given our history of embracing their platform, this is especially upsetting. Our syndication feature is responsible for hundreds of millions of tweets, and we eagerly enabled Twitter cards across 70 million blogs, 30 billion blog posts as one of Twitter's first partners. Now, that's pretty interesting, too, because the Twitter card feature was all in an attempt for Twitter to start controlling the experience no matter where you're actually seeing tweets. You know, they're going to look the same. They're going to link back a certain way. Tumblr says, we're one of their first partners.
Yeah.
We're playing nice. What's the problem? You know, didn't get a heads up about it. And now it's sort of like, okay, well, if there's a Twitter hit list, which was actually the name of the BuzzFeed article from yesterday, who's next? Is it Flipboard? Because if it is, Flipboard is screwed as far as the Flipboard as we know it today.
Right, because Flipboard takes Twitter posts and then mixes them in and presents them to you in a magazine-style format.
In an experience that Twitter does not control.
Twitter has said that they don't want you to group Twitter posts with other posts from other competing services. That's one of the things they're against. At the same time, though, Ryan Sarver on Twitter said, and he works for Twitter,
yeah,
Storify is a good example of what we want developers to do, but doesn't Storify do the same thing? They group Twitter posts
Storify,
in with other things.
Yes, that's true. But Storify works within design constraints that satisfies Twitter.
Mm.
Flipboard is the kind of place where you are like, I don't really feel like reading my news feed on Twitter, but I like the way it looks on Flipboard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to choose to use Flipboard instead, who has their own advertising model. That's not okay with Twitter. Now, Flipboard, as far as we know at the time of this recording, is not officially on the chopping block, but it seems like a logical step. Speaking of Tumblr, Marco Arment, who is the founder of Instapaper, but also worked at Tumblr for 4 years, had tweeted yesterday, if Twitter cuts off Instapaper's find friends access, I'll probably remove all Twitter functionality. It'll hurt, but it'll feel right. This sort of goes into why app.net is starting to look more and more attractive to people who are just worried. They're worried about what Twitter's doing, how it's going to affect users, and how it's going to affect users because it's not in the best interest of users.
When Twitter first launched and I saw it, they called it a microblogging service. That's what it was. And these tiny posts are basically blog posts that were limited by characters. So one of the things I did when I started using Twitter was following people that I didn't know. I didn't really use it like a social network. And that's the weird thing I kept seeing as Twitter grew and grew, people kept calling it a social network. And I didn't ever really see it that way. The fact that they've kind of moved toward the media side of it still means that they're producing content. That's like I'm producing content for them, or you are, because we're writing tweets. I don't think that not being able to find friends would be like the end of the world for a lot of people with Twitter. Because if their friends are really using Facebook for what it's supposed to be, or using Path, or using these other real social networks for socializing. Tumblr and Twitter are head-to-head. They're both blogging services, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but finding friends, literally, you're right. I don't use Twitter to find friends because the Mars Curiosity rover or Breaking News are not my friends, but I follow them on Twitter. However, if those accounts are also on Tumblr, I like the ability as a user to say, hey, all those people I'm following on Twitter, can you find those and follow them on Tumblr? Mm-hmm. At the same time, I sort of understand why Twitter is like, you know, we really don't see the benefit to us in helping you do that.
Right. You're using our open graph right. in order to populate your service quickly and easily for
I
you.
I think it's a little limited. I think Twitter is blowing some good feelings, and I don't think it really hurts them to let these APIs out. I get why they don't, why they want to limit the apps that are out there that mimic what Twitter can do. Twitter wants to control the experience on apps. They want to control the way you look at Twitter. And what they're doing is saying, and a lot of people are saying it, so they care, they don't care about developers. They're saying, no, what we want you to do is take Twitter and extend its functionality, not mimic its functionality. So Branch, Medium, and then bringing up Storify as another example are ways that we want you to extend Twitter. We've moved beyond needing people to create an app for us on iOS. We can do that for ourselves now.
And the thing is, Twitter kept expanding its own functionality. So when you go to the site, they have embedded videos and photos, and you can some news organizations, you can see more information right there in that tweet. And because Twitter keeps expanding what it does, it's cutting out everybody else who used to do those old things. So it just seems like, though, if you were a developer, you're constantly going, okay, what if they add this feature? Now I can't use my product. What if they add this feature? So that at some point, people are just going to back away from bothering to extend Twitter.
Well, and how
it's been
how
a conversation for. Oh, sorry, Sarah.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, thank you. That's been a conversation for 2.5 years now, right? Twitter has been unfriendly to developers for a while now. It's not like this is new. Sure, it's a new level, but I remember hearing a lot of people, especially when they bought Tweety and put out their official app on iOS, they were saying, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, I worked on the Twitter, you know, over the Twitter infrastructure to build my app, and they're screwing me. And, you know, that was something that Twitter felt they needed. And today they feel that they need to do some other things that are received with a similar nervousness by the developer community, which I understand. But I think that there are still opportunities for everyone to leverage that network and to get back to the conversation about Flipboard. I really think, maybe I'm wrong, but I really think that this is also the kind of things that Twitter would want because it does extend the way you use their service. What they would like, though, is for the companies that really make a heavy use of their API, that those companies work with them and probably, I'm guessing, monetize that use. So I don't think Flipboard is going to be next, but maybe someone's going to knock on their door and say, hey, guys, let's discuss things now because we need to, I don't know, make money or control the experience or something. But it's definitely understandable that Twitter would like to get serious. And I really don't think this feeling towards Twitter is new. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's change, right? Change upsets people. And what Twitter's doing is saying, we used to operate our API this way. Now we want to operate it this way. And the folks who liked it the way it was are getting upset. And I think that's perfectly understandable. But if Twitter had never offered those kinds of API hooks in the past, then people wouldn't be upset that they weren't there as much. Although you look at Google Plus and people are crying crazy, like, please give us an API. So there might be a more generalized complaint, but whenever a company changes what it does and grows, it's always going to have problems like this. And I don't think this is going to go away for Twitter. Eventually, the services that they're encouraging, like Branch and like Storify, they may eventually change their opinion on those, and then those will be cut off or limited in some way, and then those people will get upset. Of course, Ev and Biz will probably move on.
The big question, though, and the question I want to ask you guys is, do you guys think that this rises to the level of, you know, I don't know how to call it, but abuse of power, let's say? Do you think it's too much, or do you guys think it's okay for Twitter to do something like that?
No, I don't think it's an abuse of power at all. It may not be the smartest way to interact with your developer community, and it's definitely going to anger some people. But I don't think it should be thought of as illegal or even evil. It may be just a little insensitive.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of a weird reaction, we had that Newsfuse story about 47% of U.S. consumers surveyed didn't care about 4G LTE. What's going on with this, Ayaz?
Yeah, the survey by Piper Jaffray, they surveyed 3,000 individuals, and the question was, which 4G wireless is, in your opinion, better? And there's a nice little pie chart about it. 4G, just as 4G, I guess that includes WiMAX and HSPA+, 12.4% said that was the best. 4G LTE, 15.1% said that was the best. 25.7% said they're all the same. And again, almost 47% said, I don't need 4G. Which I'm personally just appalled by this entire idea. Of those who've had an opinion, Verizon Wireless was the clear winner, followed by AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile. And the analyst who wrote the note, he mentioned that while Verizon's winning, this is actually really good news for the other competitors out there because they don't seem to know what's going on.
Right, they don't care that Verizon has the biggest LTE network.
Exactly.
The majority of people polled anyway.
That's pretty much the quote, because the fact that most customers don't have an opinion about the best 4G network is also good news for the remaining carriers.
Do you think a lot of that is just based on people saying, well, I can't really upgrade right now, so I'm going to say that I don't
care. Or they don't have it yet. Yeah, exactly right.
I'll tell you who I blame. I blame the carriers for abusing the term 4G for years. They've been telling people, oh, it's 4G. Well, wait, now that's not 4G. This is 4G. And people, it's bankrupt, and people know that. People aren't stupid. Well, they're a little stupid sometimes, but they're not that stupid. And they realize, like, you've been touting this 4G thing for years. We don't know what it means. I've had phones that you've called 4G. They didn't seem any faster than 3G. I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. I really think that's what's going on.
We're not saying equating 4G with super fast wireless cellular network here. We're just calling specifically what 4G means in the U.S. Are we?
Well, the survey is saying LTE. But as far as we know, the way they phrased it was 4G LTE. And I think as soon as people heard 4G, they're just like, oh, whatever.
Because the thing is, the way I understood this survey is people don't need anything other than 3G. But then what I think is that people don't even know what that means. Before you propagated ADSL everywhere, people would have thought that their, internet modem connection was fine, the RTC. And here, people don't understand how their life and their use of their devices will change once we have pervasive, always on, always available, super fast internet connections on our mobile devices. It's like, Henry Ford saying if I had asked what people wanted, they would have told me a faster horse. Right, people don't know what they want until you show them you show it to them, as also Steve Jobs famously said. I think this is a case of that. If you give them 4G that works super fast and super efficient for 6 months, and then you tell them, you know what, I'm going to take that back, and here you go with your crappy 3G, I think the result of the survey after that would be very different.
There was also this FCC report, the 706 report, that said that apparently the United States is not making reasonable progress towards bringing broadband networking to all Americans. And there's a think tank called the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. And they said the conclusion is erroneous. They think that the FCC should look at wired and wireless solutions together when looking at broadband instead of looking at them as two competing services. And I'm wondering if 4G technologies in the United States were married to the term broadband, if you just called it wireless broadband, would people start caring, or would they understand what's going on? Because right now, 4G, the term is, who knows, it's marketing. But broadband is a term that we kind of understand in general, meaning, oh, that's really
almost
fast.
Almost like high def, right? People know, like, high definition, I want that.
Yeah.
That's the best.
They kind of know what it means. I think that would go part way to dispelling this attitude. Because if you say, all right, you've got, instead of a 3G phone, you've got a 12 megabit per second phone, and we're going to give you a 42 megabit per second phone, or we're going to give you an 80 megabit per second phone, then it becomes clear what this means. And people don't go, you've been saying 3G, 4G, I don't know what this is, all a mess. It's probably not any different, right? All of a sudden, there's a number there. But I think Patrick's still got a point that people don't know what they're going to do with the faster speed until they experience it. And I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah, I was thinking because you have broadband at home. So you go, I can do everything I do at home outside. That's, I think, is the key. Because it seems like people are willing to accept that when you're on a wireless network, you're not going to have the same experience you have at home. At home, you can like stream lots of videos. You can download things. You can move around a lot better. But when you're outside, you're like, okay, I can kind of check like these three things right now. I'll use the app because it just uses a little bit of text. And you just kind of, you have a limited experience when you're outside. I just think that if people thought, oh, broadband, oh, like home, is much faster, they would look at the numbers a little bit more.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But they've gotten used to changing their habits depending on whether you have access to Wi-Fi, your home, you're in your comfortable environment, or you're out and about.
They're conditioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to uncondition them.
And then you've got bandwidth caps to contend with. Yeah, Once people can do everything outside of home, then it's like...
Like, great, you give me a faster speed so I can hit my cap faster.
I don't even want it.
No,
I don't want
sad.
4G or LTE.
You know what? That's a really good point. That may be part of this, too.
And battery performance as well. At least on Verizon, the 4G comes at a cost, right?
I don't want a really fast engine. It's going to waste gas. It's like, no, I want a fast car.
I'm going to get a speeding ticket.
I don't want to go on a picnic because they're ants. Oh, I'm going to stay inside. It's going to rain outside.
Yeah, I hate ants.
I don't want ants.
Speaking of raining and having ants at your picnic, HP had to... talk about their earnings, and it was like raining ants at their picnic. So what's really going on with HP? We heard of the numbers in the news fuse. It's not about tablets, folks. It's if you're thinking like, oh, well, they're still got that Palm problem and the touchpad. It's definitely not about that. First of all, there's a bad economy. So you're seeing declines in lots of different areas, PC revenues, enterprise servers, business critical systems. They dismantled a couple of acquisitions. Palm is most famous, but also Electronic Data Systems. EDS was a $9.2 billion write-down for them. So that takes a big chunk out as well. They wrote down $8 billion for enterprise services last quarter. Networking revenue is a bright spot. Up 6%, but it's not enough to change. So what's CEO Meg Whitman doing? She's spending more on research and development, especially in security, cloud computing, and data analysis. She's revamping the PC, printer, and enterprise services units. Those are the ones that are costing a lot of money. That costs a lot of money to lay people off and restructure. They're going to market a Windows 8 tablet to businesses, possibly not until 2013, but they're not going to go head-to-head with the iPad. They say, we're going to do what we do best and go after businesses. And as I mentioned, they're laying off workers, 115,000 workers by the end of October. They're going to spend the money they save on software, and then they say they're just going to save up the rest for a rainy day. It looks to me like they're being squeezed on the one side by Apple and Lenovo with their PC sales and their consumer products and their business products as well. And then by IBM, Wipro, and Tata on the other in the area of enterprise services and being someone who provides enterprise solutions, as they call them. Also, David Chernikov at ZDNet pointed out that the data center market is growing, but it's not growing for HP because companies tend to be choosing smaller, more flexible, and more innovative companies. So I'm going to throw it out to you guys. This is the hard question. What should Meg Whitman do? And is she doing the right things?
Well, that she's not already doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like Meg Whitman has a multi-year plan in place. It doesn't feel very good right now. They lost some money. You got to do some restructuring. Like you said, actually laying people off and restructuring, even though you think, well, that saves you money in the long term, is expensive in the short term.
Right.
And it is messy. And it looks bad for the company. But it seems to me like she's kind of got the plans in place. It's more of a 5-year plan for HP rather than we're going to turn this around by the next quarter.
Yeah, I mean, her plan definitely seems different than her predecessor. Apotheker wanted to make HP IBM, effectively. Wanted to say, okay, look, we're going to shift focus. We can streamline the company, totally do a different thing. And the company did not respond well to that at all. They effectively rejected him and all his crazy ideas. So Whitman going back to the tried and true, we're going to do enterprise, we're going to do PCs, we're not going to be doing a lot of acquisitions for a while, that kind of movement, that seems like the right way to go. It's a slow and steady race for HP because they're a big brand. They're not untrusted in the enterprise or and by customers. What they need to do is they're hoping that with Windows 8, Microsoft's going to do a big push as well. That's always been their bread and butter when it comes to they're the number one PC maker. I mean, that's what they were for the longest time. So if they can continue doing that and sell to consumers and still get in good with the enterprise, that's getting fiercely competitive with the bring your own device craze. It's just keep on track. I think Whitman's doing the right moves.
Also, a Windows 8 tablet marketed to businesses sounds pretty good. When in 2013 do we expect to see one, though?
That's the worrying part, is that it might not come out until later.
Until people don't care about one from HP anymore.
Microsoft itself isn't putting out its Windows 8 Surface tablet until later. It's the RT tablet that's coming out at the end of October, so it may not be as bad as it sounds. Mm. Patrick, if Meg Whitman knocked on your door right now and said bonjour, what would you tell her?
I would tell her, first of all, you have a lovely accent. So that's something. It's really difficult. I've been thinking about this while you were speaking, and she's really covering all her bases, right? She's ticking all the boxes, and the good boxes. We've seen a lot of people doing things that we were thinking, you know, as CEOs, we were like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? That's not the case here. She's spending on R&D. She's revamping the PC market. The Windows 8 tablet is definitely a good thing. The only thing I would say is this seems very conventional, maybe. You know, it's all the things that everyone would expect you to do. Maybe we would have liked to see something a little bit surprising, a little bit innovative. Maybe they wouldn't talk about the innovative things they're doing right now. But it's really the only thing I could say about it. And also, I wouldn't have any other more intelligent advice to give. So I'm sort of stumped. I'm like, okay, sure, do that. See if it works. It seems safe. But I'm not cheering for her or the company, the way the company is going either. It's sort of a lukewarm feeling.
Yeah. So I think we all sort of agree. She's doing all that she can do right now. We're still sort of waiting for this plan to unfold and see if it works.
Well, she's doing all that she can do. All that we would expect her to do. I think there's an important caveat here. She's not taking the company or doing things that would surprise and delight us, right?
Yeah,
It's very, it doesn't, yeah, that's what I said before. It's sort of expected. So
let's take a look at Google's new red team. Is this like red versus blue? What is this Google red team?
The Google privacy red team. Now, what this team is going to do, they're going to find and try to resolve privacy risks in Google products. Now, Google just recently settled a privacy issue with the FTC for like $22.5 million. So maybe they think it's cheaper to hire a team. They posted ads for a data privacy engineer. The job description says that the engineer will, quote, will work as a member of our privacy red team to independently identify, research, and help resolve potential privacy risks across all of our products, services, and business processes in place today. Now, Kaspersky's Threat Post blog said that red teams are common to check security, but Google's move may be unique in that it takes on privacy risks. So do we think this is Google's genuine effort to try to combat all its privacy gaffes, like remember Google Buzz? Or is it just a PR move? I'm thinking it's probably serious.
I don't think it's just a PR move. I think it is instigated by the need for good PR as well as avoiding the FTC coming in and fining you again. I think they really are taking seriously the responsibility, partly because they believe that it's important, but partly because they've gotten slapped now and they don't want to get slapped again.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Google and privacy and effectively how sensitive people are getting or users are getting to privacy concerns with Facebook or Google messing up as often as they do, I'm very curious if other companies are going to be announcing, oh, by the way, we've had privacy teams this whole time because I don't think they want this kind of
flack. Does Google really mess up all that often or are they just noticed more? I mean, I think it's because they're big that we see every single thing they do. I think there's plenty of smaller companies out there that are much worse than Google at protecting your privacy. The stakes just aren't as high.
Also, I'd love to know who exactly is getting hired to be running this red team. Is it just a restructuring inside the company of people who already are sort of the privacy security experts at Google? So is it a reorg? Because even that doesn't mean that it's just PR. It might mean, hey, listen, you're going to spend a lot more hours each week focus on exactly this rather than what you were doing before or something else. Because I think that matters too. I mean, if you're just changing your resources, that's still a good move, but it is going to take away some resources unless you're actually building a team from scratch.
Is it overemphasizing privacy?
Well, I mean, who's going to say that that's a bad idea?
right now, nobody, because it's the popular thing. But, you know, without going all Scott McNeely and saying, you have no privacy, get over it. I think we are sort of, I think it is a symptom that we are like extra concerned with privacy. And maybe that's a good thing. But I wonder sometimes if we're going a little overboard.
I mean, I could see this being a reaction to Google integrating all its services into under one privacy policy, or most of their services. And the fact is, now when one thing changes with one different site, one different property, it can have long-ranging impacts on everything else. And now that they have this cohesive, like, Google Universe thing going, they can't withstand another hit. Google Buzz was on its own. But now that everything is kind of together, they can't keep taking hits, well, PR-wise, or monetarily with the FTC. This is just, I think, a good practice to go, all right, this is a real concern. This is something we have to worry about, especially if we're going to be putting everything together.
Right. I'm not talking about Google particularly. I'm talking about as a society. Are we just like every little piece of anything that gets out, suddenly it's become like, oh, there's a privacy problem. Instagram lets you opt in to showing the locations of things on a map. It's a privacy invasion. You know,
we kind of
lose our heads all the time.
Sometimes I do feel like we build all of these tools that are designed to, I don't know, offer a lot of information that we've never had before at the expense of privacy, right? You do have to lose a little bit of privacy in order to get some interesting features, right? Look, location services on my phone. Without that, my phone is half as useful. But a lot of people don't like that idea of that. So it's like we're fighting against the technology that's moving so fast that we haven't really put in social rules. Social rules aren't in place enough for a lot of people to feel comfortable with the lack of privacy that we've built for ourselves and are continuing to build. So yeah, it's an uncomfortable situation for a lot of people.
Patrick, I know you've been trying to break in here. What do you got to say about this?
I'm more in the Scott McNeely camp of things, but I definitely think, you know, I'm also agreeing with Sarah. We have to give up some of our privacy to enjoy the benefits of some of those services that we love. And you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? You, if you want to have these things, then you have to suffer the consequences sort of these things and the risks. And it's like, you know, you remember when the cell phones started becoming popular and some people were saying, yeah, but if I have a cell phone, then I'm reachable all the time. I don't want to be reachable all the time. Well, you know, that's what you have to live with if you have a cell phone, or just don't have a cell phone. In this case, if you don't want your privacy to be at risk, maybe, then you could stay off the internet. Obviously, no one's going to do that. The internet is super useful. That being said, I would commend Google and would recommend that everyone else has almost a private unit within the company to sort of be the watchdog, to take a step back and think, okay, are our policies okay? Is everything going well? You can't fault them for doing that. So yeah, I applaud Google for that move, if it's indeed substantial, as it seems to be.
Listener 44 in the chat room had exactly the reaction I was trying to avoid, which is, let's post Tom's phone number and see how he likes it. That is not what I'm saying that there should. That's why I said I'm not in the Scott McNeely camp. There is stuff that we still consider private and should consider private, but I think sometimes we overreact to the things that aren't, you know, aren't your social security number, aren't your phone number, aren't those things that we generally concede are private. That is what Sarah was saying. Things that we actually make public on purpose and then get mad when people find out about them.
Yeah.
And wait, what are we doing? I don't understand. I guess the reason I'm a little bit more relaxed about it is I don't really understand what the huge deal is. And maybe it's because I'm a fairly public person. I remember when I first started doing podcasts, I was very nervous about even using my real name. Obviously, I wouldn't want my phone number to be, you know, posted everywhere. But I thought that when my name would be public, then something bad would happen. And it didn't. You know, people know my name and it's fine. So I also agree. Well, I'm agreeing with everyone. It's fantastic. I agree with you, Tom.
Yay.
I think we do make a bigger deal out of these things than they actually are. But I also understand that some people are nervous about it. It's a hard transition. But I guess the example, sorry to extend the topic, but the idea of a social security number, I'm sure, must have been appalling to some people a 100 years ago. The idea that your government would have a unique number that they would identify every member, every inhabitant in the country. I'm sure solicited some negative reaction to it, used to it.
We're not used to it. Actually, there's a bunch of people who think it's awful still. I mean, that debate actually it wanes, but it's still going on. We got to get to our final discussion topic here. Nintendo's boss not intimidated by Apple, says the headline of Kotaku.
Yeah, the world still needs dedicated gaming handhelds, particularly ones made by Nintendo. At least that's what Nintendo president Satoru Iwata told Kotaku. He actually sat down with Kotaku reporter Stephen Totillo for about 45 minutes. They had a translator, but he was really bullish on the dedicated handheld console market. On the subject of Nintendo's own hardware, he said, "I think if we're able to provide experiences on handheld devices that consumers cannot get on another device, then we will continue creating software and hardware going forward. If it comes to a point we're not able to do that, yeah, you'll see portable handheld gaming devices go the way of the dodo, I guess." What he's pretty much saying is we just don't feel that way. We don't feel like people don't need handheld gaming consoles. What was interesting...
Because we made so many of them, we can't feel that way.
Yeah, exactly. He says he doesn't think it's nonsensical to want to be able to game on a device you're already carrying. But he says there are two different reasons that people game. And the reason that Nintendo titles are different are, quote, "I think within games, you have two needs that people fill. One's the time filler need." I mean, I think that we can all agree sometimes games are time fillers. "The other need is that it's very important time for me and I want to have a rich experience. Those are two separate needs." At least that's what Iwata says, and that's what Nintendo is banking on. And this kind of actually reminds me of our discussion yesterday about a dedicated camera, point-and-shoot camera. You know, and I said, yeah, sometimes it does feel a little bit cumbersome to have everything in one device because you're doing a little bit too much, even though I've argued in the past that gaming consoles on their own, particularly handheld ones, do seem to be going the way of the dodo because people just don't want to have too many things in their pocket. But then again, it depends on what kind of gamer you are. If Nintendo can offer a rich experience, and they really can deliver on something like that, and people do see a difference between the two, then yeah, Nintendo isn't headed for disaster, at least, you know, not anytime soon. He also says he doesn't think the handheld gaming market is shrinking. The Kotaku reporter noted he had a MacBook Air and an iPhone when he pulled up these numbers to me, so it's not as if he has a problem showing off Apple products because he doesn't think they're close enough competitors. He says the 3DS had sold 10.5 million physical games in its first 14 months. That's more than the DS had sold in the same period of time. So Iwata is saying, okay, well, maybe people do love gaming on mobile devices, but it doesn't mean that we're not selling stuff. People want what we're putting out there.
I don't know. It smacks to me of somebody who doesn't want to admit that what he's been promoting and his business is relying on might be a trouble.
You know, I mean,
also the 3DS sold a lot of units at first,
right?
But didn't have the same staying power as its predecessor. Go ahead,
these dedicated non-connected devices. These will always have a place as long as they're kids. Like, if you don't want to give your kids, you know, basically a bill. Like, okay, when I give you a phone, I have to pay for it. I'm thinking with the rise of the shared data plans, this is where the trouble really is. Because if you have these shared data plans and it only costs a couple extra bucks to give your kid a connected device, which could be an Android device, could be an iOS device, could be some other gaming device, if that's the case, that's when Nintendo really has got to start worrying. Because it's not that people don't want to play games. It's that people don't want to pay for another contract. And if it becomes cheaper to give a kid a phone, you're like, oh, good, by the way, you can call me if something goes wrong. A lot of parents would love that idea instead of giving them a 3DS going, could you please let me know if you're coming back? I think that's where the real problem is coming up. But as long as these contracts are still there for all these devices, that's where Nintendo's still all right until the shared data plans become somewhat reasonable.
Patrick, do you have any thoughts on this before we move on?
Maybe just a quick one. I think he's right when he's saying that there are two different types of gaming and phones are only fulfilling one of them right now, the time filler one. I'm not sure it's going to last forever, though. Let's say You know, there are discussions about a standardized controller, a controller standard for phones and mobile and tablets. I think that would go a long way to get real gamers, quote unquote, into the phone gaming arena. And there's also another thing. He might absolutely believe everything he's saying, but if they're not looking at what the mobile revolution is doing to the gaming handheld gaming market, that's just irresponsible, I would think. So I'm sure they're doing that. They're also looking at it as well. They're obviously not discussing it with the public right now, but yeah.
All right, real quickly before we move on to the randomizer, this just happening right now, Facebook updating its iOS app. Everybody's very excited because it's native now instead of HTML5. So if you've been complaining about how slow the Facebook app is on iOS, go download it and update it. Apparently it's much zippier. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Mars rover Curiosity actually roved for the first time.
It was the first test drive around a crater. And there's a quote from NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory's manager, Peter Theringer. He says, "We built a rover. So unless the rover roves, we really haven't accomplished anything. It's a big moment." So apparently this was about a 15-foot drive. It rotated to a right angle, reversed, leaving tracks in the soil. So it looks like the rover is good to go.
Oh, it's about time it got moving. Right?
What's it been doing? Just sitting there?
Just sitting around.
Firmware upgrades.
Not rovering.
Waiting 14 minutes on its 256 megabit per second connection for software updates. No, this is awesome. It's good to see the continued advancements in the rover. Let's move on to the calendar.
It's a short calendar today, but tomorrow, Friday, August 25th, marks 1 year for Tim Cook as CEO of Apple. It was when Steve Jobs officially stepped down and the board put Tim Cook in.
Wow, it's been a year, huh?
It has, yeah.
Ars Technica has a retrospective up. Gigaom has a retrospective up, kind of looking at what has changed, what hasn't over the past year under Tim Cook. We got one email to get to in incoming.
Incoming message.
This comes from Steve C. I got the same email Steve C did. He said, "My Amazon cloud subscription will expire? I just got this message from Amazon. What kind of crap is that? They are certainly not dependable." And then he goes on to quote the, "Your Amazon cloud promotional subscription will expire on August 26th. Well, it was a free trial. Maybe Amazon didn't make that clear to Steve C. or some other people. But yeah, it's a pay service. Now, you still get a certain amount. You get 250 songs for free. And anything you buy from the Amazon Music Store gets to be stored for free.
It's limited to 5 gigabytes of storage.
Up to 5 gigabytes. Yeah. But you can get more by paying them. They just gave you a trial.
It was the idea to hook you because you upload everything you wanted and hopefully you'd use their service forever. And then, I knew this was a promotion when I saw it, because when I saw that email, I'm like, it's expiring. It says promotional subscription will expire. I'm like, I forgot it was a promotion.
People don't read close, though.
Mm. No.
Yeah. Or remember.
Yes. All right. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for submitting stories in our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. We use that as well as many other sources when we determine what we talk about each and every day. So let your voice be heard. Get in there and submit some stuff and vote things up or down. And thank you, Patrick Beja. Always good to have you on the show. Let folks know what you're up to and where they can find your work online.
The easiest thing is to go to patrickbeja.com, where you'll find links to all my shows, English and French language, or just Twitter, not Patrick on Twitter, and that's easy and quick and enjoyable.
Also not Patrick on AppNet, if you're in there as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I love app.net. I love it.
All right, that's it for Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Or you can give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Back tomorrow with Darren Kitchen. We'll see you then.
Fun.
That's an interesting one. I didn't mean for that one.
I kind of like that.
That should be the pre-show thing. When you're
setting
up,
Patrick.
Hey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Sarah. I didn't mean to cover you. I'm covered.
Put it down.
I'm not even in that shot. I'm blocked by the microphone.
Oh, it's all about Tom once again.
There you go, Tom.
Where am I?